All right, let's welcome in our program director, who is known as Jeff the Catman Catalonic Catlin.
Yes.
We jumped it, too. We caught it in time.
A first cousin of the former Ranger great Frankie Catalanato.
When Jeff went on vacation. Hi, Jeff.
Hey.
How are you?
Good. How are y'all?
How are we doing?
Kicking ass, man. Just tearing it up over here.
No show can go from the depths of doo-doo and White Rock Lake to Paul McCartney carpool karaoke to what we're about to discuss in the span of 40 minutes.
We're very unique. Well, you were gone, and Right. Was I the first one to alert you of the death of Vinnie Paul by text?
I don't know if you were the first, because I got up Saturday morning about 7:45. I went to my cell phone, and I had 8 text messages, and I was like, oh, crap, which station went off the air, and why didn't I hear my text messages? So I don't remember who was first, but I had heard from you, I'd heard from Mike, and I heard from several other people, and it was all basically the same messages we exchanged, which was WTF Vinnie Paul.
Yeah. Well, Vinnie checked out. Vinnie was a P1. We had Danny on Monday to walk us through it a little bit, but, you know, you were deep into the, not deep, but you were into the Pantera scene, and you ended up knowing these guys. A little bit at least. And Vinny was, you know, you put together the promo that I think debuted today.
Yep.
Talking about Vinny. And Vinny was a P1 for a while at least.
He was. And I think, you know, early on, it's really weird. And I thought about the origins of this. This is the earliest days of a ticket. This is when Chuck Cooperstein used to be on, and the Hardline was a noon to four show with a different co-host for Mike. And you know, it all, I think, stems from a couple things. One is one of the original producers of the Hardline before I started producing the show was Mad Max Hammer, who was a DJ on Z-Rock, which was an old hard rock and metal format back in the late 80s and 90s. And he left the show, which is how I was able to come on board eventually, to go be Phil Anselmo of Pantera's basically valet on the road. And so we had that connection already. Those guys are from Arlington. I mean, I remember hearing about them. I saw them at Six Flags, for God's sakes, in 1984 when they were like the biggest thing in Arlington from Sam Houston. And they were all sports fans, too. But there was that connection from the earliest days of the ticket to where we got on the guy's radar because we were new and because Mad Max had worked there. And then we had a caller early on in the days of the ticket. And just like we do now, you meet the same P1s over and over at events. The same P1s used to call in, and we become friends with those guys. And one of them was a guy named James Mulqueen. We called him Slow Mo from Pantego, and he was also part of the Pantera road crew. And he used to call in, and he was the one who kind of made the first introduction to the radio station from him through us and then on to Vinny, who was just a huge sports fan. And that was really kind of the impetus behind the whole thing. And I'm talking, this is 94, 95 at the latest.
Yeah, super early.
Boy, your recall for this is amazing.
Do you remember Slow-Mo?
Yeah.
And actually, I've looked up Slow-Mo, and if he's listening or someone that knows him is listening, please tell him to get in touch with me, because it's been a few years, but I've even done the Facebook search for him and tried to reach out to people that I thought knew him just to see if he was still around, and I've lost track of the guy.
What's his real name?
I thought about it this weekend. James Mulqueen.
Okay.
Fine, Jeff.
Fine, James.
And the thing was, is the reason it was so early is one of the main things that happened early on. So Vinny would call in, and he'd love to talk about the Cowboys and, of course, the Stars. He was big into the
So
Stars.
He would call in?
Yes.
I don't remember Vinny calling. Do you remember Vinny calling in?
Not real well, but I will trust Cat on this.
Well, he used to call in, and it was a big deal. And I think one of the things that my job was to tell Mike, and at the time Greg Williams, the old co-host of the show that's been gone from the station for a long time, was to explain to these guys, look, man, I know this is Pantera and we're in Dallas, Fort Worth, and we know who these guys are, but you don't understand that these guys are huge. They're giants right now. And the thing about them in their career, there was really, and we all understand what happened in 91 when Nirvana came out with Nevermind, and it kind of killed that whole hair metal scene at that time. And nothing really happened there. But Pantera basically took the metal baton and credibility directly from Metallica, who put out the Black Album at the same time in 1991. And obviously that record was huge and Metallica was huge. But then Metallica went away for 5 years until 1996. Nirvana and grunge was huge, and really the only band to pick up that American thrash heavy metal baton was Pantera, and they were huge. Their records that came out in 92 and 94, Vulgar Display of Power and Far Beyond Driven, were platinum selling records. One of them debuted at number one on Billboard, and I was trying to explain to these guys, hey, this is a big deal to have Vinny call in and to be on the show. And
I had no idea.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Well, this was your dark period anyway.
Yeah, it was. So I had no idea. I was just going along with Kat because he was very convincing.
And the thing, too, that, you know, these guys weren't getting any airplay or any radio play. Just like all these metal bands that I could bore you with for the next 15 minutes all throughout history, they made their way through touring and through having great records. And the metal community is very tight. And it reminds me a lot of The Ticket because the line of demarcation between us that all work at the station and our listeners, it's almost non-existent. And it's the same thing in the metal community. You feel like you know these bands and you've invested so much in them, and they treat the fans the same way. But the reason I know this was so early on is because one of the first big things that happened between Pantera and The Ticket was Vinnie Paul was convinced that the Cowboys were going to beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship game in 1994. This was Barry's first year,
mm-hmm.
the first year of The Ticket. And he got on the air and started talking trash with Chuck Cooperstein. And there was a bet between Coop and Vinnie. And if the Cowboys won, I forgot what his angle was, but if the Cowboys lost, which they did, then the next time Pantera played in Dallas, Vinny had to wear a 49ers jersey during the set, which he hated because he was a huge Cowboy fan. He used to wear Cowboys ball caps on stage.
And did he follow through?
Yeah, he followed through, and we all went to the show, and we were there backstage.
Okay.
The guys, and I mean, we have pictures somewhere. I need to look through my stuff at work because I'm fairly certain I've seen it in the move of Coop and Vinny in a Steve Young jersey.
All right, I know you don't care about the clock or time management, but I do. Let's take a break and come back, and I want to talk about what the Bomb Factory and the city of Dallas has planned, or Pantera, the metal community has planned, and the family has planned for Vinny, and a few more stories about his connection to The Ticket with Jeff next. All right, let's continue with our discussion about Vinny Paul. Jeff Catlin, from live from Arlington, reporting with us. Okay, first off, concerning the memorial.
Yeah.
There is going to be something called Vinnie Paul, a public celebration of life.
That's right. It's going to be open to the public. Sorry, I didn't know if you wanted me to pick up the ball. Our chemistry is kind of weird right
That's
now.
Okay. Don't worry about it. Yeah, I'm just reading it here from the Rolling Stone. It takes place Sunday, July 1st. It says, it's at the Bomb Factory.
Yep.
The line for wristbands begins at noon outside the venue prior to the 3:33 p.m. memorial. What does that mean? They say that's a little Easter egg for Pantera fans.
It is. Vinny and his brother Dimebag Darrell, who everybody knows the Abbott Brothers, were really into the number three. That was like their thing. That was their bit. One of their videos was called Three. And every time they saw three or they made a reference to it, it became like a running joke. So that's why they're going to have the service at 3:33. And his private service, which is going to be held on Saturday, I assume, here in Arlington, is also going to be at 3:33.
Okay. And, so you can start waiting in line at noon outside the Bomb Factory if you want to go to the public memorial. Do you think...
I've heard no more details on that other than the fact that they are not going to have lists. There's not going to be any special kind of treatment. You just basically line up and go. When Darrell Abbott, 2004, they did a public memorial service at the Arlington Convention Center one evening, and it was open to the public. And I don't remember. I mean, it was 10,000 people, 8,000 people that showed up. Eddie Van Halen showed up. Wow. Zakk Wylde showed up. I mean, these guys that everybody knows who Eddie Van Halen is. Zakk Wylde is best known as being Ozzy's guitarist through the 90s, but now he's has his band in his own right. But there was a lot of dignitaries there. I have not heard much more about this service on Sunday yet, so I'm not really sure what to expect.
Well, he was living in Vegas, correct? But he would come back here every now and then?
Yeah, I think I don't know if he was still maintaining his residence here. I assume he was. But he was spending a lot of time living out in Las Vegas over the last several years, working out there with another band that he was in called Hell Yeah.
Okay. And as far as the infamous party that took place at his house after the Stars won the Stanley Cup, and we talked about this a little bit on Monday, is it, I don't know what you heard, but it was supposed to be like the most debaucherous post-celebration party ever.
Yeah.
Do you heard the same things?
Yeah, and I actually watched a video today that was posted by the Dallas Stars and Fox Sports Southwest that actually took, I think they filmed it a couple of years ago because it was during the 20, it was last year, they filmed it during the 25th anniversary season on the night they honored Yeri Lettman. And they had Vinny on, and it was actually with Bob and Seve and Josh during intermission, and they talked about this very story that we've all heard, which there was a huge party, and Ludwig and Vinny, and then by way, you know, Dime and the guys in Pantera became friends with the guys on the Dallas Stars. And there's a lot of metal fans on that Stars team back then. And again, the same thing, mutual respect between that team and the Pantera camp. And they were partying at Vinny's house over here in North Arlington. And the Stanley Cup went off the balcony into the pool. It didn't quite make the pool, hit the ledge and got dented. And I remember after that, hearing that story from the guys that I knew and knowing it was totally true. But when it came out, they blamed it on Guy Carboneau and said, you know, Guy Carboneau mishandled the cup and something happened. It was no big deal. But that night, Vinny did say, yeah, we threw it off the balcony into the pool and it didn't quite make it. And that is one of the, you know, the biggest stories in Pantera lore around here, along with the fact that they have that Dallas Stars song, that goal song, which they wrote in one night at the studio over here in Pantego, where they used to record all their stuff. Because Ludwig was tired of the music. It was getting stale in the locker room. And before that playoff run started, he said, hey, man, if y'all can do something great, if not, no big deal. And so they wrote it in a night. They sent it to him and said, use it or not use it. And, of course, they started using it. And now it's the song that's played after every Dallas Stars goal. And I think that will continue.
I hope it does. It's a great song.
Oh, yeah. That should it's last cool. into perpetuity.
And do y'all remember the parade after the 99 Cup? You know, they paraded in downtown Dallas, and it ended at Reunion Arena, and we covered that on the ticket. But Dime and Vinny were in the parade on a flatbed, and Vinny was playing his drums, and Dime was playing guitar, and they were playing that song on, like, an endless loop on the trailer in the middle of the parade. They were in the Stanley Cup parade.
So ridiculous.
It's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, it totally
and,
is.
And, you know, it is. And I mean, of course, this affects me in a certain way. And I mean, I feel like that just through the station, we've all had the opportunity to be around people that we never thought we would have or talk to people or whatever. And I mean, it's on some level for me that way. But there's so many people that are listening right now and that are still P1s that I know and that I still keep in touch with, that this touches them on the most personal level because they know these brothers. They know Vince Abbott. They worked around him. They were in their camp. They grew up with him. They maintained friendships with him. That this really hurts on a family and a brotherhood real level. And I think, you know, it's important to remember that, too, that this guy was a legend around here and a legend in the metal community. And it's a tragic passing. And for guys like me and for us, and we have that small connection through the radio station, and it's a joy to share these stories and reminisce and think about it. But there are people that know who they are, that listen to the Hardline and listen to the Ticket every day still, that this is a tragedy beyond the scope, like if we lost one of our family members for them. And I think, you know, a shout out to one of those guys. And like I said in the promo that we put on today, let's all raise one and pour one out for Vinny this week.
Yeah, and he's getting buried in a Kiss casket, just like his brother, right?
Yeah, because those guys, it's well known, were huge Kiss fans. And you know, we're kind of, these things go full circle. So where we're talking about our brushes with those guys and what it meant to us, you know, they toured Kiss in South America in the 90s. And it was like the biggest thing that ever happened to them because when they grew up, Kiss was it. They were into Kiss and Van Halen and they wanted to be the Van Halen brothers. And so that was well known. And over the years, then you get into the business and you have a certain level of success and they were around those guys and a true friendship formed. And I think that's one of the things. When you talk about Vinny, and also his brother, too, this also brings up those memories from 2004, but Vinny had the ability to make everybody feel like they were cool, and it was, you were part of the scene, and you had fun, and they were all down to earth, and he was down to earth, and so they end up maintaining these friendships with these guys, whether it be Kiss or the guys in Alice in Chains. Jerry Cantrell had a great story in Rolling Stone this weekend, and guys have been coming out of the woodwork talking about what Vinny meant to them and what he had done to help them. Because as these bands mature, they end up helping the next bands that come up behind them throughout the community, just like Kiss helped Pantera in the 90s, you know. And I think that's cool to see. And I think that more than anything is a testament to what kind of person and personality Vinny was throughout all aspects of his life.
Do you think Phil will be at the memorial service?
100% no.
Yeah, he wasn't. Remember, he wasn't invited to the Dimebags.
Okay, I'm just asking, Kat. That's all.
No, that rift will be buried this Sunday, and it'll be buried with Phil too. And that was never repaired. There was never really any talk of repairing it. And when talk was brought up all the time in the metal press or the mainstream press to either one of those guys about repairing it, done was done. It was going to always be done. And I just never thought that that was going to be repaired. You know, you're talking about a death. You're not talking about a breakup of a band over hard feelings or something like that. I mean, that was a pretty deep and permanent rift that happened.
Hey, so we were talking on Monday about this, and we couldn't figure it out because you guys went to that show in Dallas in 96, the show that the band invited you guys to. And so you and I guess everybody, or was it just you, Mike, and Greg, or was it the whole show that ended up going?
Followell, Expo, all the guys that were on the Hardline crew at the time. I mean, I can't remember. You're talking about the New Year's Eve show at Fair Park Coliseum, right?
Is that what it was? Okay, we couldn't figure out when it actually was because...
I thought it was Starplex. No?
Where are you guys going here? Are you going with the Phil Died?
Yes!
Again?
Was that... Were you at that show?
I think Grego may have been there and left early, but I was definitely there. I was backstage the whole time, and I saw Phil being rolled out on the gurney and the EMT pumping his chest.
And wow. That was at Starplex, right?
That was at Starplex.
And you were backstage?
Yes, I was there.
Yeah, I was there too.
Happened. I saw
I was there too,
okay.
But I didn't see that.
Were you guys freaking out?
Yeah, because the crowd control and the security had moved everybody back then. So the backstage of Starplex was different than it is now, and there was more like a chain link fence, and they pushed everybody to one side, and he came, you know, the EMTs and everything came out the other, and it was like, is that Phil? Oh, my God, Phil, what's going on? What happened? And then, you know, he was whisked off. No one knew how serious it was until a few days later. When, you know, yeah, he flatlined. He was battling heroin at the time, and he flatlined, and they were able to resuscitate him. And the story goes, you know, and this is true, like 2 or 3 days later, they played a show. Like nothing ever happened.
God, man.
Man, that's hardcore.
My favorite story of those guys, and I love telling the story to my friends, and it never gets old, and I'll see if Mike remembers this. It'll take me 2 or 3 minutes, so... We used to do Diamond Talk at the ballpark, out by the ballpark at different restaurants or whatever, and it was Mike and Greg Williams, the old co-host, and I was producing their show, so I was the clubhouse reporter, and then on the crew was Mark Followell and Kevin Fox Expo is what we call them. And so a couple times during the summer on a Friday night after Diamond Talk, we would get the bright idea, generally led by Grego, that, hey, we need to go to the nudity bar on Friday night after Diamond Talk. And there was one down in Arlington right by the ballpark. It was all nude BYOB. So we had this idea. We're going to do it on a Friday. And I told Slow-Mo or whoever about it. And they said, yeah, cool. Vinny and Dime are in town. They're going to roll in with us. And I said, great. But just remind these guys, it's not like going to a regular club. It's BYOB. He's like, yep, no worries. Got it. So we go after Diamond Talk. Do you remember this, Mike?
I do.
Okay, so we go, the five of us, after Diamond Talk, we meet. There's a gas station right next to the place where we're going to go hang out. And so our version of BYOB is we go in there and buy an 18-pack of Miller Lite and a Styrofoam cooler to take into the club with us and then pour ice on top of it. And we're in there. We all pop our first beer, and we're thinking we're doing pretty all right, having a good time on a Friday night after Diamond Talk, and we're going to hang out with the guys. So the next thing you know, a big commotion at the front door, and here comes Dimebag Daryl and Vince Abbott, Vinnie Paul, along with Slow-Mo and a couple other guys, and their idea of BYOB was a keg in a trash can, iced down, just like you would buy from some keg shop like Cool Keg, and a half gallon of Crown Royal on top, and they are wheeling this thing over to our table, and that's their BYOB because these guys are rock stars, and that's how they roll, and they sat down. And I looked at that, and I was like, oh, my God. And the first thing that happened was, of course, shots of Crown with a little bit of Coke in it for Black Toots. And Mike and Followell and I look at each other and was like, yep, here we go. And the first shot went down, and beer started flowing. And I sat next to Dime that whole night, and we were just cutting up, having the best time. And any story that you can think of as it went from there for the next 2.5 or 3 hours is exactly what happened. But that's how they rolled. With BYOB, meanwhile,
a keg.
We have Miller Lite for five guys on the table.
So are you going to the service, too?
I don't think I will. I thought about it. I don't know. I may change my mind on that, but I think It's going to be, I'm sure it's going to be overrun with fans and people that won't be able to get to the family service that had a closer relationship to Vinny than I certainly have. And like I said, these are great stories and I love them and I cherish them. And I think just the fact that we as a station and me personally were able to touch these guys, you know, over the years like this has been great. It was a lot of fun. And I would see Vinny from time to time, and I saw him probably the last time 2 years ago at Gas Monkey Live at a show. I can't remember who the band was, but I was walking back and he was standing in the crowd, and when I would see him, I would say the same thing every time. I would say, "Hey, Vinny, Jeff Catlin from The Ticket," and he looked at me, smiled, and said, "Catman." And I walked to the bar and got my drink, and that was it. But he was there with his girlfriend, and they were hanging out. And I mean, it's Vinny. Everybody knows what Vinny looks like, for God's sakes. He's wearing his cowboy hat and his beard and the whole thing. But that was it. That was a couple of years ago.
Did he have any kids?
No.
Didn't? Did Dime?
Not that I know of, or that's ever been made public. Public knowledge that I know of.
Well, if you do go to the service, Cat, do one thing for me. In fact, not just for me, for all of us. Do it for The Ticket.
Yeah, do it for The Ticket.
Yeah. Go sleeveless.
I was thinking about wearing a suit if I do it.
No, all right, if you do, cut the sleeves off.
All right, dude, we're late again. We got to go.
Yeah, you made us late, Cat. Right. God.
See you, man. Thanks.
All right, there he is. There is the Cat Man at 6:52 on The Ticket.